Welcome to today's episode of Target Table, and we're going to be unpacking websites, copywriting. Maybe we'll talk a little bit about AI, getting some questions about that. And today on the couch with me, we've got Hans. The beautiful Hans has hailed in from the Philippines and now lives and resides here in Australia full time. Man, welcome, dude.
Hello. Glad to be
Excited
here.
To have you here, man. And we've got Dennis as well. So Dennis is our senior editor for the copywriting team. And you have a big background in SEO and some marketing stuff as well, man. So
I do.
We can dive in. But yeah, I guess if we just want to kick things off, I mean, I really want to unpack, I guess, like some of the latest happenings in the world of websites and SEO. Like, I know that it seems that SEO is always this elusive thing and everyone has the latest hack and everyone's doing the latest thing. But like, from what you guys have seen and some of the stuff we've been doing for ourselves and our clients and the introduction to AI, like, what have you guys noticed in the SEO space?
Well, actually, there's been a lot of changes in the SEO space.
Yeah.
A lot of people who actually do SEO have been rattled by, you know, the advent of AI and all that. And especially a lot of people who do copy, a lot of people who make copy specifically for websites. Mm. They were like, oh no, you know, is this the end? Is this the end of my job or whatnot?
There's a lot of that talk online. All these like gurus coming out and saying it's the end of, you know, freelancers as we know it. But I'm seeing the opposite. I'm seeing more freelancers.
Yeah.
I'm seeing people produce more workload. I'm seeing clients getting more involved in the process. Mm-hmm. Clients seem a bit savvier with what they're doing, but they still need help.
Like, right.
Man, I've had maybe, I guess, at least 8 or 9 calls this week where clients are dabbling with AI, mm-hmm. but they really struggle.
That's true.
They don't have the time to do the research. They mm-hmm. don't know how to do the prompts. They don't really know what they're doing. So like it hasn't killed freelancers. It's actually, I think, created at least initially a lot more inquiries, like help me with this AI stuff. I don't understand it.
Yeah. It's sort of like even it made the playing field even more level.
Yeah.
To a lot of people.
Yeah.
Yeah. Which is great, I think.
It's given business owners access.
That's true.
And now they're interested in writing copy.
That's true.
Maybe they're not writing it, but they're like interested in creating their own copywriting.
Yeah.
Whereas like 2 years ago, the conversation used to be like, what's copywriting?
Mm-hmm.
Whereas true. Now everyone knows what it is. But yeah, man, like what's been your thoughts on it? Like this, like, you know, death to freelancers, death to everyone's jobs talk and what you've witnessed in among your friends and your community.
Well, it's interesting because I actually think that we've sort of been in this spot before. Every time like a new technology is invented and it takes over an industry, a lot of people in the industry think that, oh no, this is the end or whatnot. Of course, with AI, this is like it's exponential compared to like, say, from horses to automobiles.
Yeah.
It's like way more. It's like in steroids.
Yeah, it's right? like a quantum leap. So it's not like here's a better refrigerator, mm-hmm. slightly faster, slightly colder, all the rest of it. This is it's an actual innovation.
Right.
So like, you know, if you look at, you know, even how ice has been evolved and innovated over the years, like people used to carve that stuff up out of lakes, put it on the back of a cart, you know, trek it by horse into the middle of town and door knock and sell ice to people.
Right.
Then it went from that to people realizing that they can create their own vats and freeze their own ice in the wintertime. And instead of using it from the lake, they've kind of got their own water supply and they did the same thing with horse and cart. But then it went into, you know, trucks. Maybe that was a little bit of an advantage in speed and all the rest of it. Then it went to literally factories learning how they can produce ice.
That's true.
Themselves using their own electronics and all the rest of it. Still delivered by truck, and then it went from that and it quantum leaped into refrigerators.
Yeah.
So it went from factory to in the house.
Yeah.
You can make ice.
And now everyone has it.
I don't know how ice will ever evolve again, but you know what I mean? But I think, you know, it's the same kind of thing. It's like going from horse and cart to get ice into, it's in your home now. That's kind of the analogy I look at with ChatGPT. It's instead of me having to hire a consultant, I can kind of dabble in it now. Maybe the ice isn't as good. But at least it's sparking a conversation between business owners and people in the industry that are copywriting.
Yeah.
It's definitely impacting jobs and wages and stuff for sure. Mm. It's definitely speeding up the output and distribution, but you know, and I can't say it's going to stay like this forever. Like who knows down the road, 5 years from now, what this means, but
true.
Yeah. Yeah. But you're seeing a massive amount of quantity output. Mm. Whereas I think if you used to want to do SEO, someone would literally be sitting there writing each blog. Mm-hmm. Now, you know, we can write topics and outline problems and be like, we want 99 blogs in the next 10 minutes.
Yeah.
And they can spit them out.
Yeah, it can spit them out. But again, for me, it's more like a pencil. How I think about this is like a pencil. It's like if we can all have the same pencil, but the outcome will be different. Right? I mean, if you don't know how to use a pencil, if you don't know if it's a pencil in the first place.
It's a tool.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. It's a tool.
That's a good concept. It's like, you know, we could, you know, give two different people a pencil, they'll get something different with
exactly.
it. So me using ChatGPT versus you, I would just look like a Neanderthal, bro. I was trying to use it the other day, just mucking around with it. And I was like, I am getting terrible answers
right.
with my prompts.
Right.
But I think the advent is like people are now learning how to kind of speak AI language. It's almost like you have to adapt how you talk to AI.
Yeah, that's true. That's true. Yeah. You know, when ChatGPT first came around, I was like, playing with it, and I was thinking, so it's actually the prompt. It's how you structure, you know, the question.
Yeah.
So it's sort of like prompt engineering.
Mm. Yes.
And then all of a sudden, a few weeks later, prompt engineering just, you know, just popped out everywhere.
Yeah.
Yeah, pretty interesting. And
it's like
I saw
a new industry, and it's now an official title. I'm a prompt engineer.
Exactly, exactly. Yeah. And it's funny. There's this meme that I saw. It was like...
you pull it up?
It's a lot to go on.
Yeah, let's get interactive, man.
Yeah,
you can't talk about a meme and not share it. That's selfish.
Yeah, I'll send it to you later.
Okay.
Yeah, it basically says...
Not shareable?
It's shareable, but I have to search for it. This was like months ago. It basically says for clients to actually use AI effectively, clients will have to know what they want.
Which,
we're
dude,
safe.
That's a good question.
We're safe.
We're safe, man. Like, got a lot of love for all my clients, but so many times we get on a call and there's like that lore. It's like what the client thinks they need, their self-diagnosis, and what they actually need are two very different things.
Right.
Yeah. And I face this on probably 98% of my calls. Like very rarely does a client get on a call and know exactly what they want and how to do it.
Exactly.
It's usually, you're the expert. I've kind of got a vague idea of what I'm trying to accomplish here, but I don't fully trust myself. It's like a lack of self-trust as well. Yep. Like I'm too busy. I got kids. I got a lot going on. I got a business. I got all these people I got to hire and manage. I think maybe there's a problem here, but I don't quite know. And then we zoom in on it. It's like you're a doctor and I'm coming to you and I'm telling you, hey, doctor, my knee hurts. But then you would say, well, why does it hurt? And I'd be like, I don't know. Mm. And you would be like, when did it start? A week ago. Okay. What were you doing? I was skateboarding. Well, maybe there's a correlation there. You know, like you got to kind of investigate.
Yeah.
And that's what you're saying with a client is like, you know, so often clients don't actually know what they're trying to accomplish or what's necessary to accomplish something they haven't done before.
Or they just don't want to do it. Like for example, you do this all the time with your posts on Instagram and LinkedIn. You like give the process.
Yeah.
You like basically like spoon feed it sometimes.
Yeah.
But you know, some people just, you know, don't have the time to do it and they would just give it to you.
Mm. Yeah. Right? It's kind of like, I don't know, and I could be wrong and we could come back and watch this in a year or two and laugh at my comment here. But like, I think that with what's happening with AI, I think it's actually adding to our industry.
Mm-hmm.
It's actually shining a light on the creative industry and people are starting to appreciate it more. NFTs kind of brought all these artists out and made, you know, trillionaires out of them. And now AI is kind of adding a lot to like creativity, and I think people now can create at scale and they're experimenting. We're in this wild west experimentation phase, like what's possible with AI. Let's experiment with it. And I don't know, I'm getting a lot more inquiries because of it. So I think it's definitely, and the other thing is I think that with AI is because every business owner is jumping at the helm and having to crack themselves, advertising and content creation is only going to get more competitive. So you're going to have to get more outside the box. Like think about it. Like Instagram 5 years ago, you could post on Instagram and you could get 10,000 likes.
Yeah.
It's not really possible now. Not really. Like it's a lot rarer to do that.
Mm-hmm.
And that's because there's so many people making content. Instagram's now at scale. I think AI is nowhere near at scale yet. And I think, I don't know. Yeah.
Cool. Yeah.
I think the biggest thing about that is that people who are really bad at copywriting with AI can be maybe decent. Mm. And I think that's the thing that some people are worried that maybe AI is going to take their job. But if you're a good copywriter, it won't, because people will need to know how to use it. And probably the person who's best suited for that is somebody who at least has a basic understanding of copy.
Yeah,
that's true.
And same thing for any sort of AI. If you're somewhat of an expert in the industry, you're still going to be the expert mm-hmm. of that industry.
Yeah.
So especially with prompts, like the thing with AI is you have to be so specific with your prompts that you wouldn't know what you're missing yeah. if you don't know how to write.
Could you give us an example of some prompts that you guys have been using? Because mine were terrible when I was trying to do it the other day.
I'll defer.
I was with a client and I was writing down, I think I wrote down, give me weird facts about cats. And then it gave me weird facts about cats. I was like, this is really cool. You summarize the weirdest ones. And then it was like struggling with that. And then I said, give me some more. And then it started giving me facts about octopus and like other things. I'm like, no, the cats. And then I was like, I felt a bit like, man, like this ChatGPT stuff's a bit harder than I thought it would be. You know?
Right.
So I was like I was lost, man. Well, so I'm definitely not one to add any expertise on this topic. And that's why I want to learn from you guys.
Yeah. Well, when I first started using it, the prompts I started with were like act as a senior branding expert.
So you would ask the ChatGPT to behave a certain way.
Yeah. And then come up with this, and I give it parameters on focus on this category, focus on this. That's when I first started. I thought I had to be that specific. But with ChatGPT also, they have prompt generators that help you. You find them anywhere, and they sort of already give you a baseline for how. Then you can say it's already acting as a copywriter.
Yeah, the AI has better prompts.
Yes. The AI can give you prompts for the AI.
So when you're chatting to the AI, it's like Inception, like give me some better prompts to give
exactly.
you. It's like, talk to me like this.
Yep. Exactly.
And maybe you'll get a better result.
Yes.
Exactly. Yeah. You start with a beginning prompt and you're like telling it, give me...
Here's my prompt. Make it better for me.
Make it better so that you understand it.
Yeah.
Crazy. I just think that's hilarious.
For people who are confused about AI, just ask AI.
Just ask AI. So I should have, instead of asking about cats, I should have asked it, hey, how do we talk? How do we hang out?
How do we romanticize each other?
Okay, so then, like Dennis, when you were writing these prompts, do you do them all in one paragraph or do you feed it drip by drip? Like how do you...
I do drip. Yeah. But I mean, ever since starting with like branding and stuff, I've used it a lot less. But at my when I was heavily into marketing, then I did use it and I did drip. Feed every time because I always wanted it to start fresh.
True.
And then I would have to say forget everything that I've said, disregard everything above, and then new prompt. Mm-hmm. Or you could just start new sort of new prompt pages. But I was always the drip feed kind of guy because I didn't want it to too heavily influence the things I did. When I would do blog writing, then I would let it a bit more. But essentially I was telling everybody at the time, it's like, you're just going to have to act like an AI technician, tell it what to do and then fix its mistakes. It's just like, just being a normal manager.
Yeah. And I guess to be clear here, like we don't use, AI to write copy for our brands. Because we didn't use it on a client, but we experimented the capability of it and we still felt like, it's like missing something.
Yeah.
We actually found it was faster to write better creative organic copy. Because you know everyone here at Rival's pretty advanced with copy and how we build it for branding.
Yeah.
But we have had clients take their brand guides, feed it into prompts, put that into ChatGPT, and then use their brand architecture to then have ChatGPT write their marketing material, write their emails, write their blogs and things like that.
Yeah, exactly. I think that's the right... When it's such a creative industry, then some people... would probably use it to help them be a bit more creative, but not actually do the writing.
Mm.
So, you know, some people would ask it to sort of give it ideas to start off. But in a, to make, especially when making brand guides, because it's not the full wall of text, it's actual, just it's instructions, it's about being creative. So there's really no need for it yet. It would be, if you could just chuck in, please make a brand guide, and it immediately did it, that would be amazing, but it can't. So
yeah and even then, like, it is still like how would you describe it? Because I've heard different people describe how AI crawls the web, but it sources information from different places, and you don't know whether that material is or original or not, or if it's kind of borrowed from another brand?
Well, there is a website that can help with that. Yeah. It's called GPT-0. And so if you...
GPT-0.
If you put anything, any copy into that, it'll tell you if it's been written by an AI.
Yeah.
So it's a good sort of countermeasure. If you're asking somebody to write for you and you get something and you're like, was it written by AI? This thing will tell you.
Interesting. So you can actually vet it out. So if the client is working with an agency and they're like, we don't do AI, you can check.
Yeah.
ChatGPT0.com.
Just GPT-0.
Just GPT0.com.
Yeah.
Okay.
And stuff like that will help. But yeah, I think when using that sort of AI, especially when you're writing websites, that's where you have to sort of be very specific about prompts, like keywords,
right?
Making sure it's not too long, it's not too short, that sort of thing. So at that point, it's almost easier to just, you know, just do it yourself.
Yeah. Yeah. And I guess hopping into the website conversation, which is why we're here today, and what we wanted to unpack was like, not only can like ChatGPT write copy, but Hans, we had a conversation where you and the team in our development team were having some problems with code and you actually used AI to help find the problem in the code a lot faster than you would have naturally found it. And then you were able to get advice as to how to write and structure the code.
Oh yeah.
Yeah.
Oh yeah.
Yeah.
Basically what happened at that time was I had a code problem that I knew would be very repetitive and would take probably several days to fix, to do.
And we're talking about like, you know, 10-hour days.
Yeah.
Yeah. Like big days of like a lot of work.
The entire week.
Yeah.
Just to fix.
Yeah.
And I was like, maybe this would be a good, you know, time for experimentation with AI.
Just before you continue, we used to do that. You used to spend like a week fixing one tiny little thing.
That's a normal
thing. One little animation the client wanted. You're like, man, it's going to take me a week and a half to figure out this code.
In the dev space, in the dev world, that's like the constant.
Yeah.
For small things, you have to spend a lot of time, a lot of days just doing something.
Yeah.
Yeah. So basically at that time, so what I did, I took the code, fed it to an AI, and then told it, hey, you know, there's something wrong with this code, find it, and then make me something that does so-and-so, right? So it did that in 1 second and told me how it worked. So it basically educated me at that time. And then so I take this thing.
What code was it that you were coding in?
I totally forgot. Yeah. This was like quite some time ago and we've been handling so many projects.
Yeah.
So basically I take this thing, I put it onto the project and it doesn't work.
Right?
So, and then I take it back to the AI, tell it that, hey, it doesn't work, blah, 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 scan this page because this is where it is and figure out what's wrong. And it made a fix again. And I put it again onto the site, and it still didn't work.
Okay.
So, but what happened was this. We sort of narrowed it out. So for 2 hours, we were just conversing back and forth, narrowing the solution, making it simpler and more elegant and whatnot.
Right. So you're
and
like, maybe it's this. Let's riff. Exactly. Let's jam.
It was a conversation. It was fascinating, actually. And then after 2 hours, I got something that I was satisfied at it, and when I tested it actually worked.
So what kind of conversation were you having? Were you like just, was it very like logical problem solving, or were you genuinely, did it feel like more of a genuine conversation with a person?
It felt like I was talking to another developer. So that was how I approached it.
Yeah.
Right? So, but here's, again, the point. There always has to be a human involved.
Mm-hmm.
Because how do you know where to put the code in the first place?
Mm-hmm.
So the thing is, when it comes to, you know, the advent of AI and all that, and of course, people are, you know, thinking that, oh, okay, this is starting to replace us and whatnot. And maybe in some cases that's true.
Yeah.
But a lot of times I think we should actively think about how to place humans in the middle as sort of like a filter. So that, you know, so that these things that the AI creates would actually be used properly. Mm. No?
Yeah, and I mean, even like if you go back and read tabloids, like when they brought out IBM computers and home computers, everyone was like, this is going to replace all our jobs. You know, that just seems to be a go-to human thing, like, oh, it's the end of the world, you know. But what you're saying is you've been able to actually become a better developer because of AI, because you're able to have these rapid-fire sessions the moment you need it.
Yeah.
You don't need to wait till someone's available to call them. You don't have to pay a consultant. You can sit down and jam.
Yeah. And it basically frees my brain to do other things.
Yeah.
Other things that probably would require my brain more.
Yeah.
So it makes things actually more efficient, at least on the dev point of view.
Yeah. So you're spending your time on the big picture, big brain thinking stuff.
Exactly.
And you're like, this little annoying piece of code that's going to take me a week.
Yeah.
I can solve it in a couple of hours.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Especially the repetitive ones.
Yeah. And how have you been adapting that recently? Because I know we've had a few recent problems where we're like, man, it'd be good if we can get this done in a day.
Mm.
And, you know, it's better for a client too, because instead of them waiting 2 weeks to get one little thing changed, it's like within a day, we solved a bunch of problems. Mm. Yeah.
Dude, it's a process. I tell you, with AI, since it came out, it's a process of continuous experimentation. It's like every week there's something happening. Mm. It's like every week it's Christmas and the presents are starting to feel like, you know, it's like there is something new again. Yeah. I haven't even finished with the other new thing that came out last week.
Yeah.
You know, so it's a continuous process of really testing and playing with it.
Yeah. Do you think it's going to level out, or do you think it's going to continue accelerating the way it's been?
Oh, yeah. You know, just imagine this. If AI is freaky now, I wonder what it would be once it's more integrated with quantum computers.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, and especially with this Neuralink stuff that Elon's talking about.
Yeah.
Okay, so let's dive deeper into websites. So, I mean, if someone is, you know, a business owner and they're looking to start building a website, like, I think if we just start with the fundamentals, like, what are the fundamental things that we need to know in order to build a good website? And I think one frame of thinking that I always think about and talk about with our clients is, well, first and foremost, like, what do you want the website to do? What's its job?
Mm-hmm.
Is its job to collect leads? Is its job to build a newsletter? Is it just to educate and inform people? Is it to sales convert? I think there's so many decisions you have to make before you even start trying to pick the platform you want to build on and all the rest of it. So like, what's the initial, I guess, criteria to just set yourself up for success so that when you start building, you're not kind of making mistakes and going back and, you know, reworking later?
Yeah. As what you said a while ago, you talk to the client and figure it out from their end. Like, what do they need? What do they want to do? Instead of saying like, oh, here am I. I'm just, you know, do things my way. Instead of doing that.
Which is what a lot of ad agencies do.
Exactly.
We've got the perfect recipe. It's exactly. A, B, C, D. If you just do it this way, you become a millionaire.
Exactly. Yeah. Actually, what I really like about what we do here at Rival is seeing your process and how we do things. It's like getting into the brain of the client and trying to figure stuff out that a lot of times the client doesn't even realize or know.
Mm.
Trying to figure stuff out and then building something that is beautiful and functional and would actually be of value to the client.
Yeah, because the conversation might be like this. The client might say, dude, we need a website for this new fitness apparel brand that we're launching. I'm like, okay, cool. How do we make money? I'm like, whoa, like we're jumping straight into bed, you know, like we can get to the money making part of it. But like, first and foremost, like who's the audience? Everyone.
Yep, exactly.
Okay. Mm. But if you're targeting everyone, why would they pick you?
Yeah.
I don't know how to answer that question. Okay. Well, we need to, you know what I mean? Like it's, I think when you build a website, it's so strategic. You have to think about a lot of like simple things that aren't sexy.
Mm.
Like who is the target audience? And oftentimes people struggle with that because they don't know how to answer it.
Mm.
But it's like, well, we need the answer to that. Like we're building websites, sure, but who is it speaking to? Who the hell are we trying to have a conversation with? It can't be everyone. You know, Nike doesn't talk to everyone. One of the biggest brands in the world talks to people that like to feel like they're in relentless pursuit of greatness. They are action takers. They want to feel a sense of confidence and power. Like that's the crowd. So like, yeah, I think from my experience, you got to really get in the head, and the client oftentimes doesn't want to think about the things we're asking them about.
Mm.
Like, what's the reason you want a website? To make money. Okay. Other than that, well, we want to sell a product. Cool. I know you want to sell a product, but why? Well, because our quality is better.
Mm.
Well, what makes it better? We source it from the same factory as Gymshark. Okay, cool. But why wouldn't I just go buy Gymshark? They've got a more reputable brand. So you gotta kind of unravel the onion. You gotta peel back the layers. Mm. And I think that it gets to a point on a call, like 30, 40 minutes in, the client's kind of like, man, you got a lot of questions. I'm like, yeah, like we've got to figure this stuff out. But then there's a respect as well. They're like, oh, you care about this.
Exactly.
You're not just trying to sell me something. You're trying to figure out my problem with me. And I think it's like, you know, Chris Doe talks about it. It's like when you go to the doctors, you got to diagnose the real issue. Because if you misdiagnose and you give them the wrong prognosis, then they're actually going to be worse off. Like if someone's taking money out of their bank and investing it with an ad agency or a marketing agency or a web agency or whoever, I think it's their duty and responsibility of care to like make sure that they're not just taking the money and slapping anything together. I think it's so important that you get the fundamentals. So for me, some of the fundamentals are who's the target audience? Why should they care? Why should they buy from you? And also just like the little details, like, you know, how are we going to talk to them?
Yep.
Are we being serious? Are we being playful? Are we being cheeky? Like,
What's the tone of voice?
What's the tone of voice? So like, if you guys want to unpack that, like what is the tone of voice for a client and why is it so important they know the target audience when writing copy?
I think as well, you were saying it's the fundamental stuff. So even going back even further is before you say, oh, I want to make money off a website. First you have to be like, well, who are you? What does the brand stand for? How is it going to speak? Who's it going to speak to? And in terms of, if you're building, let's say you're just focusing on website, your tone of voice as your brand should be the same when it goes across touch points. So you don't have sort of emotional whiplash when you're going through socials onto websites and stuff. But if you're doing tone of voice for websites, then you really have to focus on your target audience, which is why we always ask them and sometimes harp on about, we really need to hone in on your target audience because you speak differently to the people that you're in the room with. And unfortunately for when it comes to brands, you're in the room with everybody.
Well, it's a good analogy, right? Like the way you would talk to your mom.
Yeah.
It's going to be very different to how you talk to your mate at the bar.
Exactly.
It's going to be very different to the girl you talk to on a date. It's a different tone of voice.
It's like if somebody asked you, oh, can you write a letter for me? And you're like, well, who's it for? That's the first thing you'd ask.
Yeah.
Is who's it for? And how do you want me to speak?
Is it to your ex-wife? Is it to your son? Is it to your friends? You know,
is it good? Is it bad? Do you want them to come?
Are you angry? Are you happy?
do you want them to call? Do you want them to click on a certain button on the website? What do you want?
Or even the reaction, right? Yeah. Like what do we want
them to feel?
Do you want them to learn or do you want them to get excited? Do you want them to spread the word and tell people how funny it was that they read that? You know? Yeah. So maybe you would look at copy as like, well, who's it for? What's the point? What's the exchange? And maybe what's the impact or the outcome?
Yeah. Exactly. And then that also helps a developer develop the actual wireframes for a website and actually give sort of the parameters of like someone like me, what can I work with? And if they know that already, then they can really help the copywriter and help themselves in the end because then they don't have to go back and change things.
Yeah.
They have to have that information at the beginning. So the more you know about your brand and your offering, the easier the website's going to be.
Yeah.
Especially on the people that are building the website.
And then the other thing is like differentiation. So actually zooming out and going, who are we competing with? And what's their tone of voice and how are they speaking? And how do we just not just copycat the same tone of voice? Like if everyone's being happy and playful, like why would we be the next happy and playful option? So then what would you say the importance of copy standing out is? Because dude, we go to websites all the time. We read it and we're like, so generic. They're talking about features and benefits. There's no energy exchange.
Yeah. Standing out for copy is like, it's like making a first impression.
Yeah.
So if you go on a website and let's say it's just visual focused mainly, then obviously the visual part is what's going to stand out first. And it usually will, even if you have great copy. But the second you start reading something, if you care about copy even a little and the copy is bad, you're going to be thrown off.
Yeah, and it might even be conscious. It might be like, I don't know what's up. Like,
this kind of doesn't speak to me, which is then you're not the target audience. But if you are writing, if you want your website to speak to, let's say, an athlete, and you write for a magician, then the athlete's going to look at it and be like, oh, this isn't for me, and just go away.
It's too cryptic and
weird. When you wanted an athlete. So if you write for athletes and you want athletes to come, then they will be there. So I think that's the most important thing about the first impression and the importance of copy at the start is really making sure you're talking to the right person.
Yeah.
And sort of hitting their needs.
And in the event where you can't put a label on them, like let's just say it's for mums. It's like, well, what type of mum? Is she a first time mum? Is she pregnant? Is she a corporate mum? She works a job and has kids? Or is she a stay at home mum? What kind of community does she live in? Is she in the city, in the country?
Exactly.
Does she have hobbies and things that she's into? Mm. So you're trying to figure out their character.
Yeah, you build a customer profile or an archetype depending on how broad you want to be. And that sort of helps you hone in. So if you, like you said, if somebody's like, oh, it's for mums, and you're like, what kind of mums? It's like, oh, just mums. Well, then you're like, okay.
34
well,
to 50, yeah.
Yeah, yeah. and then you think, okay, well, what type of feeling do you want them to feel then? Mm. And then you can sort of, you have to take another route. If you can't really nail it full to get a customer profile, then you have to do like a more of an archetype sort of thing. And you think, okay, well, what's the feeling you want them to feel? Then we can sort of navigate the copy to that.
It's so important, right? Because like Nike's trying to make you feel confident.
Yes.
And then Dove Soap's trying to make you feel loved and nurtured. Brands, yeah, usually the feeling is kind of the rhythm or the pulse or the main mechanism.
It's the constant.
Yeah, that's the constant. That's a good word for it. And it's, you want your copy to kind of loop around that throughout all your messaging, not just on the website, but it needs to show up in your ads, needs to show up in your emails, needs to show up on content creation, all the rest of it. Yeah.
Because there are brands that appeal to a very wide age range, and then it's the specific marketing campaigns that go for a target audience, but it's always the same feeling.
Yeah.
If it's the brand gives you a product which gives you a feeling, so you go for that. Somebody like Apple targets a long range.
Let's pull up Apple, because that's maybe a great universal example of a brand that speaks to a broad audience. Now, if you go back and look at Apple's original copywriting, which we've looked at from like the 80s, 1986, it was very different to the copy of there right now.
Yeah.
And I think like, would you guys agree? And I was having this conversation with the team the other day. It seems like a lot of big brands, like even Nike, like they had that tagline, just do it, which is like a reference to a serial killer that got, you know, done in the chair and all the rest of it. And it's like, what?
Hmm.
It's like one of the coolest taglines ever. And it has such a dark origin story.
Yeah.
It feels like as brands get bigger, they need to broaden their copy. But it seems like a lot of these big companies like Nike and Apple, when they actually originated, their copy was way more niche.
Yeah.
And it's like you almost have to start niche and then branch out.
Yes.
Eventually.
And that's what I mean by how when you start off, you focus on the audience on one particular type.
Yeah. So like even Apple and how, you know, if you look at the origins of their branding, if you go back to 86, like Steve Jobs commercial, that famous, I don't know if it was the Super Bowl commercial, where that, you know, woman's running out and she throws a hammer at the screen and it's always
1984.
Yeah. Thank you, brother. like even just the messaging back then was very contrarian, very rebellious, very we don't fit in, we're different. They've kind of, I wouldn't say completely disconnected from that, but they don't even use the tagline think different anymore. They're a bit more, they're at scale. They're just trying to be a lot more universal as a brand. I would almost argue that brands should probably start more niche than they plan to be and broaden as they grow.
Mm.
Yeah. We've done that a little bit.
Yeah, we have. And Hans and I were actually talking about this earlier, where with Apple, they now don't even have to sell you anything. They just say, here it is. And you know
number 15.
Yeah.
You're like, what's the difference?
Yeah.
Buy it.
Like if you were to just say 15 Pro, people would know what you're talking about.
They're like, I get a 14. You loser.
Yeah. You got a 15 Pro Max.
Yeah.
So you would know. Like that's how they commoditize the name. And they really focus on the names. Like you've mentioned it before, the iPhone, the iPad, the iMac. Like it's all making sure that it's not just a phone, it's an iPhone. And so immediately it has brand recognition. And that's the thing that I think people make a mistake, even on websites, is that they act like they have brand recognition when they don't.
Yeah.
So they skip all these steps and they go straight to, I want to be like an Apple. It's like, well, how long has Apple been around? How long have you been around? How many people know about you? How many people know about Apple?
Right. So they don't have equity in the mind of the consumer yet. So like you say, let's just say Apple launched today as a new company and someone said, I had an Apple. People would be like, what's that?
Exactly.
You have a piece of fruit in your pocket. Like they've built this concept, they built an enigmatic idea, an emotional attachment. They've told stories for years. Like there's fans of Steve Jobs, there's fans of old products. Like we've even got like the first iPhone up on the wall there, right? And you know, I just have it on there as a reminder where it's like Steve Jobs has that line where he's like, I want to make the phone so sexy people want to lick the screen. Like that's just there to remind me of that one piece of material that Steve wrote that I love. But I think it's, you're right. I think brands really have to know where their position is and play to their position. And you got to be kind of conscious as a brand about, okay, where are we from? Like, where's our backgrounds? Mm. Where are we now? And where are we headed? And that's why brands need to have a vision statement. They have to have a mission statement. It's like, what are we in pursuit of? Yes. And you're saying you got to kind of know where you're at. If you're an unknown brand, you really got to crank the volume up. You really have to maybe not necessarily be opinionated, but stand for something and really kind of carve out your part of the market. And once you own that part of the market, then you can kind of branch out a little bit and kind of progressively scale and grow and gobble up new markets.
Yeah, it's like I was saying, with Apple now, their marketing doesn't have to be like, we're the best or buy the iPhone. They just say, it's out. And then people will come and buy it. So can you imagine right now you're a new phone company and you market the same way Apple does. People would be like, who's this?
Yeah.
Why are they acting weird?
Right.
Like they're acting like, you know, they think they're big. You have to be big. It's like the Nothing phone. When that first came out, they had to really push for that marketing.
They had to really educate.
Yeah. And they had to find their thing. They said, we're the Nothing phone. There's nothing that you don't need. It's just like very focused marketing. And it's very focused on their target audience. With Apple, their target audience is... It used to be people who were into tech. Now it's people who want to look like they're into tech or people who want to look cooler because they have an iPhone, including those people. It's not just them, but it really includes a broad spectrum. People who don't know anything about technology will be like, oh, just give me the iPhone because they know about
it. We had that experience. So I used to work at Telstra, which is like a mobile phone retailer service provider here in Australia. And Brad, who's on our team, him and I used to work together. And legitimately, you would have a client walk in and plop down their iPhone, let's just say 11 at the time, and say, I want the best new iPhone. They didn't even know what it was called. They're like, whatever the best one is, just get that for me, would you? And no problem. Do you want me to show you the range? There's actually 5 different options. Nah, just give me the best with the maximum memory. Like it's homogenized in their minds. It's just, if I'm not seen with the latest iPhone, I'm not the coolest girl at school, or I'm not the, you know what I mean? Like there's this status and the affiliation that comes with it, because no one would do that if it didn't have equity in the market.
Exactly. And that's the tough thing with new brands is you may think, oh, can you just make me a website that makes money? It's like, well, you have to take all of what we've just said into account before you even start to ask somebody that question.
Yeah.
You can't just say like, oh, I've got a cool idea. How do I make money off it? It's like, well, no, first you have to show people that it's worth buying.
Yeah.
And so by doing that, you have to build your brand, you have to build the voice, you have to focus on your target audience. Then you also have to get somebody who knows what they're doing with websites. So somebody like Hans will be able to tell you how to start.
Yeah.
And so
that's why we have like language like startup or I'm in the incubation stage of my building my company. Like you really have to incubate, cultivate, you have to be very conscious of that. So if someone's starting, like what should they be conscious of? Like should they aim to be a bit more niche, a bit more pointed, maybe do a lot more educational content, like put a lot more effort and energy into getting their idea in the mind of the consumer?
If you're thinking of blowing up and having everybody come to you, then you really have to be in the mind. If you're looking to just provide a service and you don't want to be the next Apple, or you don't want to be somebody who's a household name across the world, then you can start a bit slower. You can be a bit broader with your offering. But if you really want to stand out, especially today, then you have to blast everything. You have to market everywhere and your website needs to be amazing.
Yeah, because even our clients that we used to quote years ago, they're just working locally. Now everyone's starting a company and thinking globally.
Yeah.
So they're thinking, you know, and if you move outside your local market and you start thinking globally, there's so much more complexity that comes to that, because the way you might talk to a consumer in the US or in the UK or in Asia or in Australia or the Asia Pacific, it's each location is very different. Like we consulted with a telecom company that are, working throughout Papua New Guinea and the islands. And it's like, they're an Australian company that's branching into this other country and they have to be conscious of how do we talk to that market the way they want to be spoken to, not the way the Australian market is being spoken to. And that's a market that's not as educated on telecom and not had the history of telecom that maybe we've had. So then it's a bigger incubation educational piece.
Yeah. And that's why strategy is probably the most cliche but important word when it comes to websites or even branding. Is what's the strategy? How do we start? So when somebody says, oh, what do we start? It's like we start with a plan. And the plan includes how do we do the wireframes? How do we focus on the tone of voice? What do we need? How big is the website? Do you just want a landing page? Mm. Do you want everything that comes with it? Why? Do you really think it's worth it? That's the sort of thing that's like, you need an expert for that. Why? Unless you know.
Why is it important to think about things like, for someone who has never designed a website before, what is a wireframe?
I will allow Hans, the expert.
Yeah, I think we really unpacked this down to its core. So I guess just to move on from the initial conversation, the first part is, what's our strategy? And basically that includes, a strategy might be like, okay, well, who are we as an entity? Why does the entity exist? Who is the target audience? Why should they listen to us? What's our offering? What's our area in the market? What are we specialized in? How do we solve problems that other competitors don't? How do we offer something other people don't? That's kind of maybe broadly covering the strategy part, and then you could distill that into, okay, now we know what that stuff is. How do we write that language? How do we target those people? Where are they hanging out? How do we get in front of them? Once you kind of get the strategy out of the way, then you would move into, I guess, the website's wireframing.
Yeah.
But I guess before we jump quite into wireframing, I would say that the step in between is maybe the tools.
Yeah.
So what website building platform do we use?
Right.
What plugins is it? Yeah. It's like figuring out our toolkit.
Yeah. Basically, to add to what Dennis was saying, what you were also saying a while ago, the strategy is incredibly important. And each website project starts with that as well. We actually call that the sitemap.
Mm.
So we basically, just like Lego, map each section in words.
Right.
What is this section? Oh, it's a hero section. What is this? Oh, it's an about section, et cetera, et cetera.
Yeah.
So that before you even write the first line of code, or before you even choose the first photograph, or even write the first real copy, you know what the content of the site or the structure of the site would be.
What page links to what page.
Exactly. Yeah. That you could also
put there. On each page.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. What's the tech that we're going to use? Mm. What are the plugins that we're going to use? This is like the initial stages.
Yeah.
And it's incredibly boring. Yeah, it's the boring part, but it's actually incredibly important.
Yeah.
So could someone do that by drawing it? Like, what are the tools that someone could use?
For me, I use mind mapping tools, like, for example, Miro. My preference is a MindMeister. Yeah.
Yeah.
MindMeister is a really good mind mapping tool.
That's a tongue twister.
Yes, exactly. Miro does a very good mind mapping tools as well. The great thing about these tools is that it actually operates on the speed of thought.
Mm.
So meaning, as you think, you can just keep putting things and delete things later.
Mm.
And it comes with a structure so that, you know, it's not like the tool is catching up to you.
Yeah.
Right?
We're just using it as a sounding board because Miro, like Miro.com, we love that one because you can just basically click, add a box and be like, this is the homepage. Then you can draw a little line coming out from it. And off the homepage, we're going to have a blog page and a services page and an about us story page and a book us in page. Like, you just want to map out like the frame or the map of how many pages you want.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
Like when building a house, what do you want? Oh, I want three bedrooms. I want one toilet. Mm. I want a pool. Mm. Mm. I want like, what else do you want? I want maybe five cabinets and all that. You know, you list down the things that you want first.
And then you draft it.
Exactly. Yeah. You don't like start with a finished product.
You don't grab a brick and start laying foundation.
It's an architect. Yeah, exactly. I think people would understand it more in that context, wherein if you build a house, do you right away start getting a hammer and a saw and just build?
Right.
You need a plan.
No, you don't do that.
It's like, how many rooms, like, you want to lay out the concept.
Exactly.
Which is the wireframe, the first out of the wireframe, which is the sitemap. Mm. So let's just get technical here. So the sitemap is detailing all of the pages.
Yeah.
And then a content outline is, okay, you create a document for each of those pages. So let's just say the homepage.
Mm.
And then you write out the formula. So it's like, okay, person lands on page. Person immediately sees a banner that says XYZ.
Mm.
They scroll down, there's a call to action button. Mm. they scroll down, there's a photo and a testimonial. They scroll down, it's this and this and this. You list out what each page's content is going to be, mm-hmm. and you write it out. And it's quick. You could do this in a couple of hours.
Yeah.
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 And then after that, you move on to the wireframes, what we were talking about a while ago. Now, if that is like, if the site plan is like your the list of what you want, the wireframes would be the blueprint. Yep. So now you're like making like lines on like, oh, the photos should be here, the text should be here, et cetera, et cetera. It's like blueprinting a house. It's actually very similar.
Maybe we could pull one of these up and just pull it out on the screen so people that are watching this can see it. Maybe we could pull up a... did we do one for Rival then? That way we're not showing them a client one. Or we can just use one on the website. We can just use one on Google. Yeah, so here we go. Okay, so, you know, you could argue that you could do this on a napkin. On a napkin, right? Exactly. You could draw it on in crayon on your front driveway, like whatever. But it's kind of placing where everything's going to sit.
Yeah. Exactly.
When you're looking at this, like, what are the things that you're like, you got to check these things off?
User experience is the first thing.
Mm-hmm.
Yep.
Like, where do I place this button? How much text do I put in? Where do I place this photograph? Mm-hmm. It's basically you're approaching it from the point of view of the end user.
Right.
What does the visitor see? What do you want the visitor to feel when they're browsing your site and
it's
all
kinda
that.
It's kind of like walking into a retail store. So imagine you're opening a retail outlet, like what's in the front window?
Yeah.
What's going to get them to walk in and go, "Ooh, this looks exciting."
Right.
What's the first selection of product they see when they walk in?
Exactly.
So the user experience is the first thing. What would you then follow that up with? Like, what else are you looking for?
Basically that's the main thing is the user experience. It would also dictate to you how much content you're going to need.
Yep.
So that when you pass it on to someone like Dennis, who's doing the copy, or to, let's say, like the design team, they know exactly what they're going to do and how much of it they're going to do. It's not like I'm going to say, okay, I need a real estate website, and Dennis knows I need a real estate website, and I know that I need a real estate website, but since we're not communicating, he doesn't know what he's going to write, where he's going to write. I mean, how much word, how many words?
Yeah.
You know, he doesn't know all these things. But if I actually start with a good blueprint, okay? If I start with a good blueprint, when I pass it on to the next level builder, they know exactly what they're going to do.
I need X amount of materials.
Exactly.
Yeah. And I think this is a great way someone could even save money for themselves if they wanted to build a website and have someone build it for them, is actually try to flesh some of this out yourself. Because then if you started to go get quotes, some of the questions a web developer would ask you is, well, do you have photography? No. How much copywriting do you want? And if you could go, it's 2,000 words, it's 11 pages, it's 27 photos, like that web developer is going to be like, man, this is a great client.
Exactly.
They've already done the initial stages for me. Let's just go into do the build. And this is predominantly what people pay for at agencies, is the facilitation. It's not just the deliverable. It's the full learning curve, going through all these different phases. And it's like going to a builder architect. You don't just start putting the brick down on the ground and start building it. You got to go through the draft. You approve the draft. Then they draft the blueprint. You make changes. Then they, you know, give you an estimate of how much it's going to cost to build. And they can't give you the estimate until they know the blueprint.
Mm-hmm.
They can go, oh, it's going to be between 500,000 to 700,000.
Exactly. But
then when they do the blueprint, they're like, oh, it's actually 486,000 to build a house.
Yeah.
Yeah. Because they know how much.
Yeah, you need to know the parameters that you can work with.
Yeah. Yeah.
Exactly. And you know, you also see that the bad ideas really quickly become expensive.
Very quickly.
Yeah. And I guess even if you did that, like, there's so many unknowns, there's so many things that people don't know about or know what to include in their website or what is going to get the conversion. So I think, you know, if we dive into, let's just say, user experience and user interface, a website that's really great, maybe as an example, we could pull it up, Cam, is the Apple website. Like, you land there and the first thing you see is the iPhone 15 Pro, which is, they know this is the predominant thing people are looking for right now. So they know the reason people go to their website, from what I can tell from Apple, is people are just trying to get product information and then they'll go buy it locally. And Apple know this. They don't expect people to buy it online, but people do. But this is This is a great website for a brand that's predominantly trying to educate you on what's happening, because they know that you'll go buy this anywhere and they still make the money anyway.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I think, and you can see it on the with the website with the design there. Most of the page, depending on how big your screen is at the time, is going to be taken over by the phone. Mm. And what we consider as basic copy, but it's effective copy. It's a titanium, so strong, so light, so pro. You know, you wouldn't have to be a 15-year veteran in copywriting to write that.
No.
But you'd have to know strategy to write that.
Mm.
So,
true.
So that's, you know, somebody who's not focused on copywriting will be able to guide a copywriter to say, look, this is what we want. This is what we want to convey. And the copywriter's like, okay, I know.
Yeah.
I know the tools. I know the area I can play in. I'll give you something quick.
Yeah.
Whereas if he just said, if you just go, oh, we've got the new iPhone, can you just make sure you sell it well? And then how? What do you want me to write? You know, we've all been in that situation just where somebody's it. Like, can you just sell it?
And yeah.
I'm like, I don't know how to do that yet.
Yeah. Can you unpack that for me? What are we selling?
Because people will care that it's titanium. That's one of the main selling points. Yeah. They care that it's strong. They care that it's light, because you think titanium, is that heavy?
Yeah.
And then you think it's pro. That's it. That's all you need.
And it's got a ring to it. So strong, so light, so pro. It's got this kind of like melodic music feel to it.
Yeah.
But yeah, I guess like if we unpack the strategy behind this, obviously, you know, one of the biggest issues that iPhone has is that it breaks, they crack their screen and they're constantly doing repairs and all the rest of it. But when you say to someone it's titanium, it's like, cool, but isn't that heavy? So then they follow that up with it's light. And then they follow it up with it's the pro.
And then when you go into that as well, you'd find out that they've made, not to go too far into this phone, but they made it easier to replace the screen. So not only have they made it stronger, but they made it easier to replace. So it's really focusing on the target consumer. If someone's like, oh, I don't like the fact that it breaks real quick. It's like, well, now it's super strong. It's like, oh, but then it's going to cost a lot to replace. It's like, no, we've made it easier to replace and cheaper. So it's just really hitting the concerns of the target consumer. And they don't have to blast that to people because they're Apple. But so if they weren't Apple, then you really would have to. That would be your main marketing campaign, would be easily replaceable, very strong, just focusing on that. And that's the difference between someone who has brand equity and somebody who doesn't.
Wow, I didn't know that. You convinced me I'm going to buy one now.
I got to get one of these for Ellie. She's notorious for breaking her phones. And this is kind of funny, but also embarrassing for her, but she'll laugh at this, is the most common damage that Ellie induces onto her phone is when she's on the toilet. You know, you pull your pants down and it comes out of the back pocket and plops straight into the toilet. That's happened to her like 3 or 4 times. And so I'm always buying her like the Otter, like waterproof, bulletproof protective cases. Otherwise, I'm like, it's going to last 3 months max. But yeah, okay. So with the strategy behind, I guess, Apple, to your point, they're predicting the objections that the client's going to have in their minds.
Yes.
Right? So they're like, okay, it's titanium. Oh, isn't that heavy? Mm. Well, actually, no, it's light. So they're thinking about, I think when you write copy and you're starting, you have to list out what are some of the common questions, the common misinterpretations, the common, I guess, rejections that someone would have of your service or your product.
Yeah.
And then you want to kind of combat that cleverly with copy and answer the questions before they even plant a seed of doubt in their minds.
Yeah. It's like when you're a product-based business, you have to do that. If you're a service-based business, most people are going to care, how long have you been doing it?
Right.
What are your case studies? So the first thing you do is you make it very clear in your website is that how long you've been in the business, what you know, what you've done before.
Mm.
If you don't have what you've done before, then you say we're the up-and-coming thing. You just really focus on what you think the person would ask.
Yeah.
And then once you do all of that, then you can make the focus on making the website interactive, like the Apple one. It's because they don't have to really go into all the selling points. They visually tell your story.
Mm.
And so they do that by making the website interactive. Like you play a video, or as you slide down, things move. It's a lot of animation stuff.
Yeah.
Whereas again, for a service-based business, it's very copy focused and it's very much like, it's just a sale. It's
well, here you go, right? To your point, you just said, if you scroll up a little bit, Cam, it says explore the full story just down.
Mm.
Explore the full story.
Yep.
iPhone forged in titanium. It feels like a story now. If you scroll down, you're seeing it being unraveled. Mm. It's zooming in on the quality of it. iPhone 15 Pro is the first phone to feature an aerospace grade titanium design.
Yeah.
using the same alloy that spacecraft use for missions to Mars.
Mm. That should be spacecraft.
Telling a story. Yeah. Oh, good one, bro. You're schooling Apple. Wow. Titanium has one of the best strength to weight ratios of any metal, making these our lightest pro models ever. Highlighted that. Hmm. You'll notice the difference the moment you pick one up. Now I'm curious. Oh, I'm genuinely like, I want to go pick one up now because I've got my, 14. But I'm now curious, like, how much lighter it is. I don't care about the weight of a phone.
Yeah.
But.
And that's the thing as well. People are really.
But now I care about the weight all of a sudden because I'm thinking spacecrafts and Mars.
Exactly. And if you're into mobile gaming, which.
True.
You know, let's say.
Weight does play a role.
Yeah. So if you're holding it up, you're holding it with one hand. It's that thing. If you're into that sort of thing, repetitive mobile gaming, then that's going to be great for you. Obviously, the fact that it's the newest will make sure that Apple always makes it great for that one. But even on the website, when you're scrolling, it has the Apple ecosystem sort of UI, the user interface. So when you scroll down, it comes up with a little thing at the bottom that is sort of like the island on your phone, that thing that comes up there.
Right. Okay. Like, so now you're kind of, and if you're on your mobile, you're kind of experiencing. That's interesting, because if you're on an Android and you're on this website, you're kind of getting an experience of what it would like, what it would be like if you had an Apple or if you're on a Huawei or a Google Pixel. Yeah.
And so it's just, again, that's what I was talking about, how you have to be able to nail the strategy so that it's consistent across everything. So when you're interacting with Apple, that's the Apple thing.
Can you just click on that button, Cam? Does it actually zoom in? Okay.
It goes straight to the camera. And again, of course. It's
imagination.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Mega powerful. Megapixel.
Yeah, it's just unpacking a story. This is essentially a funnel.
And that's the thing is with accessibility, they make it, obviously, they focus on having gray on black so that you can read it easily, white as well, everything accentuated by white. So all the things that they really want you to see, and make sure at a glance, you can, like, when you're reading this right now, the first thing you see is Photonic Engine supercharges your portraits. Portraits can be live photos too. You focus on the white text. So that's, again, another tactic. Once you've written all the copy, once you've done everything, then you focus on how you make it easily accessible. How do you make it so that this is proper?
So you don't have to read the whole paragraph if you didn't want, because they've highlighted just the main parts you need to read if you're just trying to skim.
Yeah, well, I think that's something as well with copywriters is they have to keep in mind that no one's going to read everything.
Yeah.
People usually read the top and the bottom and that's it. So if you make it easy for them to see things in a paragraph, they're not going to skip that paragraph. They're going to immediately read the important parts you want them to read, and then they'll move on.
Which is UX and UI, because it's thinking about, is any, like, if I write, let's just say this paragraph we're looking at right now, like, there's quite a lot to read there. I literally just read the white text unconsciously and didn't even pay attention to the gray. And it's like, for those that care, could read all of it. And for those that are just skimming, they can read it too and still get the takeaways. It's kind of like, have the experience you want. It's kind of here for everyone.
It's like that first paragraph, the Photonic Engine supercharges your portraits. So if you know what a portrait photo is on the iPhone, then you already know it's better now than the last one. But then you can really read in and zero shutter lag, 2x better low light performance. That's if you really, that's like normally you would click learn more and that's what would come up.
Right, because the top two lines is kind of very macro, and then the paragraph below, it's very micro. So it's like zoomed out, zoomed in.
Yeah. So and if you know things about iPhones, then you can just read the white text and you can get by and you'll know all those other things. But if you don't know, then you can read the white part. You're like, that's cool. Supercharge your portraits. What does that mean? And then you read the next text and you're like, okay, it's intriguing. It drags you in. So if you haven't made your choice at this point, which usually people have, then you've got all the information you need.
And if you don't think this is important, you're wrong, because on our rival website, we have, what is it, a 16-minute average view time?
Sort of.
Yeah. Yeah. Somewhere around there. Somewhere
around. Yeah. It has a couple of numbers.
It's high. It's high, right? So, and I think when you go to the rival website and you scroll through it, everything's kind of broken apart and we're telling a story and it's funny and it's relatable. Like if we go to the website now and just pull it up. Yeah. First thing you see in the top right is Let's Talk. So it's like, immediately these guys are available to chat to. You see our logo at the top there, and then you scroll down. Branding is our superpower. So I'm like, okay, these guys are branding. Then it's who the heck are we and what the heck is branding? So we're really trying to be newbie friendly as well, because a lot of people that book in calls with us are kind of like, what the hell is branding? Do I really need it? Then there is a paragraph there if you want to read it. Otherwise, you can just hit the Let's Talk button straight into our work, right? Back to your point, you know, showcase your work if you're a service-based brand. And our services. And then we've just made it very interactive, UX, UI centric. And we get comments every day around, sorry, my... Now Apple's talking to me. It's been listening to me. But yeah, even like this one page here where we've put all of our services in bags, it's just a fun interacting. It's a fun interaction for the client. And every time we get on calls, this is the number one thing they talk about. They're like, man, I just thought your website was cool because of this one feature. And it's because it invited them to interact with something that's animated, which is unconventional. And I think if you can create unconventional stuff on your website that's just unique, it just shows a couple of things. I think the clients go, wow, these guys care about the details. They seemingly know their stuff. They just see us as experts just because of this one section on our website.
Yeah. And we also have a branding landing page that is focused on that, but we can look at that later. But that sort of thing where it's just focused on, I think you really need to get across on the site, what is the person looking at, how they can find out more, and how you make the sell. Those are the three most important things when I'm writing copy, especially, and strategy is how do you make it clear what they're looking at? How do you make it clear that they're in the right place? And then how can they just buy something from you or interact with you? So you need that strategy. And it may sound super simple and you think like, oh, cool, everyone thinks of that. But if you just say to someone, can you make me a website that makes money? You haven't thought of those things.
Yep.
You haven't thought, well, how am I actually going to make sure that somebody wants to stay on this website? Because... you know, some people might go directly to the source, like depending on what the industry is, but they might go straight to you and ask you, okay, I want to work with Rival. Mm-hmm. Or they go straight to the website. And if they can't navigate the website, then they don't have the time to be like, no, I'm just going to call somebody at the company. They'll just be like, I don't want to do it.
Yep.
So it needs to be clear from the beginning. Who are you? What do you do? How can they get in touch? If that's at the very top, that's you've done at least something, right?
And what would you guys say that are the main common mistakes that you've seen in, you know, because both of you did a lot of website-based work before coming to Rival. Like, what do you think is the most common mistake that people make when they're building a website?
Too many things flooding your mind.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah,
exactly.
Where do I start?
A common mistake, I think, is not planning it out well.
Okay.
Just not
planning. Not having a plan at all.
Not having a plan at all. It's like, I've had that so many times wherein they'd be like, hey, I need a website for this. This is my company. And sometimes you'd be fortunate if you get a logo. I've had that. I've had projects before that don't even have a logo.
Yeah, they're like, oh, you'll take care of that, right?
Exactly. Yeah. Like, you'll make a logo.
That's what you do, right?
It's included. You're a website designer. Like,
Yeah. Okay, so that is a common mistake, is people assume that website developers will design your brand,
design
your logo.
Exactly.
It's not their wheelhouse.
No.
Typically, I guess you could say designers will design. They're not as interested in code, generally speaking, and coders and developers will love that logical side of things and not necessarily love the design side of things, but the worlds meet and they do overlap.
Yeah.
But if you sat in a room with web developers and sat in a room with graphic designers, different breed.
Yeah. Well, I think it's like, if you say to a developer saying, oh, you can do the logo and the copy and everything, it's like asking an artist to make the pencil before they start drawing.
It's just not their job.
They use it, but it's not their job. You can't just ask them to do something
that's
like that.
That's a common misconception.
Yeah.
Let's just say that.
Is that you think it's like, because you put the website together, it's like, well, then I can do everything.
Yeah.
It's like, well, maybe they can, but then you have to pay them like they can.
Yeah. And that's a good point, right? And this is why so many people hire web agencies and have frustrating experiences, because their expectation is, oh, you're meant to build the brand, do the copy. The best experience that we've seen with web developers is when, you know, someone has a brand kit and they take it to a web agency and say, here's all the materials. Like, if you're trying to make your web developer happy, like, give them the logo, give them the color palette, give them the fonts, give them the resources, materials, give them the photography, give them maybe some meat and potatoes around what type of copy to write, and they'll build a beautiful website for you.
Yeah.
And then you need to, on top of that, then focus on being mobile friendly, being focused on every sort of avenue you use the website on. And again, that's another thing that people probably wouldn't consider if they haven't thought about making a website, which is sort of accessibility and making sure things read well on every sort of touch point, which I know Hans would agree.
Because we see that all the time. People still build websites for desktops.
Yep.
Mm. And what is it? 82% of people that are viewing websites now, generally speaking, are viewing it on a mobile phone device. So they're not even engineering the UX for the primary viewing perspective for the client who's on a mobile phone.
Yep.
And they're using a thumb, not a mouse. Mm. So then you have to be conscious, like even the rival website, we have a beautiful desktop experience, but then we've actually custom engineered the thumb experience and simplified the graphics just for the mobile. Also, you have to remember that people are using Wi-Fi or cellular data, so it's slower. So then you have to engineer maybe the imagery to be less heavy on a mobile device so they can view things quickly.
Yeah,
exactly. You just need to keep in mind who is going to be using the website. That goes back to what we were saying at the beginning. That's the first step. The first step of the strategy is who do you want to use your website? And then you have to focus on everything around that. Like if you're making a website for really, let's say really old people, the elderly, people who may not be tech savvy, then you don't want to create barriers to entry for anything. You want to make it as simple as possible. You want to make sure that everything is clearly outlined. I personally would prefer all websites to be like that. But it make it very clearly outlined what you need. If I go to Rival's website and I think, okay, well, I want to talk to the person who is actually going to tell me what's going on, it's the first thing on the website. Yeah. That's what's important, is you make sure that, you know, the sell would be somebody's like, oh, well, let's talk business. It's right there.
Yeah, I think so many times people try to fit too much at the top of their website. That's been something I've experienced. Yes. So when I'm viewing a client's website, there's paragraphs at the top of the page. It's just too much information. And you really want to slowly unpack things. Mm. And the further someone scrolls, the more information they want. So you can be information heavy further down the page or create a burger menu and hide the deep information. But I think so common, if we're going back to common mistakes that people make, I think they're overcomplicating and over-communicating. So many websites I land on, I'm asking myself the question, what do they do? Mm. If that takes more than like 4 seconds,
you're moving on.
Game over, man. I'm looking at another website.
Especially on a phone.
Yeah.
If you're on a desktop, you might spend a little longer because you're already there.
Yeah.
But if you're on your phone, it's just one swipe away. You're done. You have that short attention span.
It happened to me earlier. I was looking at, so Carlos, our tech director here, you know, jumped on and did some work over the weekend when he was trying to have a holiday to help out one of our clients. And so we're surprising him with a giant box of meat. Carlos loves meat. If you've ever met Carlos, he loves two things in life, or three things: cars, knives, and meat. So I went on Google and I just typed in, you know, meat delivery. And I went to like 5 websites, and even it's just, I just want a box of meat. And I went to each of these websites and I had to scroll through their whole website just to be able to figure out where do I click. Yeah. And I just got frustrated and asked Cam to do it.
And then I started doing it. I got halfway down the checkout process and it goes, it's a subscription. And I went, oh.
So it's like, it was overcomplicating it. I didn't want to read anything. I'm like, I just want a box of meat, man. Yeah. So there was no option from my experience where I could just add to cart and just start selecting meat and check out. Like, that's all I wanted to do. So I literally spent 20 minutes trying to do that. And then I hard basketed it, delegated it to Cam. Now he has a hard basket. But it's like even just a box of meat. Like, I think everyone was overcomplicating their websites. Yeah.
And imagine that happening to like a huge percentage of their users. Yeah, exactly. How much money is
people
that?
People just want their meat, man.
Exactly.
That's a lot of missed opportunities.
Yeah.
Is it, yeah, like it, as funny as it sounds, it's just like, I just want a box of meat. Can you just give me a box of meat? And they're like, well, do you want to sign up? Do you want to know more about the meat? It's like, you've already sold me.
It's like just naturally sourced, ethically sourced. Yeah. I don't care.
Yeah, just get the done. Meat.
This you've is made a business same. Idea, you know? We'll call
we
it
need to launch
boxofmeat.com. Yeah.
Just getmymeat.com.
Just a hero section. It's like, click here.
It's for a box. It doesn't even have copy. It just has images of meat. You're like, that looks good. Add one of those. Yeah. And you see them fall into the box. Check out.
Yeah. And then we have like a mystery box.
Yeah. Yeah,
it's just meat.
Yeah, that's a great idea. It's just meat.com, and you just order a box. You don't know what's in it. I love that idea.
You don't know what's in it. Yeah,
just emu meat.
And so that's the type of stuff where you're like, you do all of that. You make sure all of that is good. And yeah. then on top of that, then you have to make it search engine optimized. And then you think, okay, well now, if you have even some sort of knowledge about copywriting and maybe some yeah. web developing, you're like, maybe I can do that. And you're a bit of a graphic designer. Then it gets to the part where you really have to make sure that people see what you're doing. And you're yeah. like, okay, well now I really need to do my homework.
Yeah, because you can't just build a website and go, my website's here, where are the clients? Like yep. that's when the game starts, right? So it's like, okay, the house is built. Now we're going to move in. Mm. You know, now we're going to invite people over, right? So I think when you're building a website, this is why it takes time, right? And this is why when I get on a is that affecting audio? Okay, cool. And this is why it's so important when you're building a website and you go live that you give, you know, yourself or the developer time. Like we get on calls where we're like, hey, when do you need a website? 2 weeks. How are we going to do everything we just spoke about in 2 weeks if you don't have the answers to the questions? So then it takes months to build a website properly, especially if you're like, I want this thing to make money. Well, we can't rush it. Yes. It's like going to a tradesperson and saying, hey, I want to open a retail store in 2 weeks. Okay, well, what are we doing in the retail store? Mm. I don't know. Figure it out
yeah.
and start building stuff. Like, whoa, hang on, man. Like there's time to this. So, okay. So let's just say you get to the stage where you've got the copy, or like someone goes through the process. They do their strategy. They do their content outline. They do a wireframe. They get everything ready. They start sourcing graphics and materials. They're thinking about the user's experience, all this other stuff. Then they build the site. Then they go live. What should I be conscious of when I'm building SEO? What can an amateur do or a business owner do for themselves? And at what point do they need to start outsourcing it most likely?
For one thing, you really have to make it mobile friendly.
Yeah.
So it really has to resize well to whatever device. Mm. A lot of people actually don't know this, but that is one of the criteria that search engines use.
Right. So SEO actually starts. It's not just about the verbiage you write down.
No. SEO. First of all, there are a lot of factors that are connected.
Let's
to
go
SEO.
Through it, man. I find this the most interesting is the stuff you don't know that is going to affect you. So many business owners don't know this stuff.
Yeah. Exactly. Yeah, exactly.
So let's start listing some of them.
Yeah. So basically, a lot of people think that SEO is just like, oh, keywords, oh, backlinks, oh, this and that, and it has to do with copy and whatnot. But actually, what a lot of people don't know is how you've built your site actually has a lot to do with your rankings in search engines.
Yeah.
So how fast it loads. Does it load well on all mobile devices and all that? How's even hidden things like alt text with images, which, by the way, a lot of developers also skip. Hmm. So basically, alt text is, for example, you have a photograph of, let's say, a puppy or a dog chasing a ball, right? And then the file name of that is img_0203, something like that, right? But alt text, what that does is you actually need to give a descriptive, to put in descriptive text to that image, something as simple as dog chasing ball.
Yeah. Yeah.
Just that.
Yeah.
That actually is one criteria. You know, sometimes... to a lot of people, this might seem so easy, so they actually skip it over, but they don't know. What they don't know is that it's actually one of the criterias for a good rankings in search engines.
And the reason why, and we've talked about this, is because Google is actually like looking at everything about your website. Mm. It's looking at the UX. It knows how to tell if your website has good or bad UX.
Yep.
It looks at the speed of how fast your images load.
Yes.
It looks at... you know, it does look at the backlinks and the verbiage and all the rest of it. It looks at the photos.
Mm. Oh, yeah.
It actually knows if you use stock photos or if you've uploaded your own photos. So, like, it's a scary level of, you know, insight. Like, even for just a quick segue here, like, on Instagram, when you post a photo, let's just say, Dennis, you take a photo of, what do you drive?
A car.
Okay, you drive a car.
Nissan X-Trail.
Okay, you got a Nissan X-Trail, right? So let's just say you take a photo on your front driveway and you take a photo pointing at your Nissan X-Trail. You upload that onto Instagram. Instagram takes that photo and audits it against 11, I think it's like 11 billion photos within the first like few minutes. And the algorithm on Instagram knows what car you drive. It knows the color of it. It knows like a lot of the details, like middle-aged man, blah, 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 right? And it knows, you know, it knows it sees a tree line behind you. Like, this is how scary.
Hair growth.
Yeah. This is how scarily accurate AI is on social media. So then, like, Google are doing similar things with websites, and they're sending their, what do you call them, like bots? They're crawling through your website How would you unpack like what's happening there though? Like, how does that work? What are the main things it's looking for?
It's looking for the speed of your site. Looking for accessibility. It's looking for a lot of different things. Even the structuring of your site, like for example, the headings, like the H1s, H2s, H3s, H4s. Is there anything broken there? Maybe you did an H2 and then the next one is an H4. That is now that's like a lower score.
Yeah.
Or maybe you got too excited one day and made like 3 H1s. Which is, you know, one of the rules for websites is you just have to have one H1 per page.
Right.
Yeah. But the thing is, a lot of people don't know these things. And even the website builders themselves, I mean, there are a lot of website builders.
Yeah.
They wouldn't place restrictions on these things.
No.
You know, so a lot of times I see that multiple people, that a lot of people actually put multiple H1s into a single page. And that will bring your score down. So simple things like that.
And the other thing as well is like, that's going to make your SEO more expensive.
Yeah, in the long run. Yeah. Because the thing is, SEO is always the long game.
Yeah. You'll spend more money on Google Ads to supplement bad SEO. Exactly. So it's actually an expensive endeavor to not have good SEO.
Exactly.
Yeah.
It's like basically having a car with square tires.
Yeah. And I'd say that's why developing is so important to things like copy. It's like you have to have the first tools, you have to have the right strategy, you have to have everything ready for you so that you're not just playing with nothing. Again, I will always use tennis. It's like expecting to play a professional match with a crappy ball and a crappy racket. Doesn't matter if Federer plays, he's not going to play well with that. And the racket and the ball, that's the developer. That's the person who's giving you the tools for you to be able to even start thinking about sort of surface level SEO, which is keywords, and focusing on that to get people. So like, you know, keyword, if somebody searches dog chasing car, you want it to come up. So that's how you use the alt text. That's how you use actual keywords in your website. And that these are the kinds of things you should always ask somebody who's making the website for you. So even if you don't know these things, it's still good to ask these things and say, oh, well, what's your strategy on this? What's your strategy on this? Or how do you propose we use keywords? Just sort of keep them
on their toes. Make sure you test them out. So, okay, so let's maybe end today's episode on what are those things you can put people on their toes with. So the last thing that I thought was interesting that Carlos told me, and you can vet this out on how accurate Carlos was, but he was saying essentially that if you build a website, let's just say you use Squarespace or like one of those kind of pre-built websites where you're using a template that's kind of pre-built. If you're using a website builder and you're either downloading a skin or you're downloading a template and you're using that to build your website on, Carlos was explaining that Google even kind of knows that, hey, that code is from this template and it devalues your website because you haven't custom built it.
Well, here's the thing. There is some truth to that, I think. But then again, Google's algorithm is so freaking advanced, dude.
Yeah.
It's like, we think we know.
Well, they don't publicly disclose it.
They don't publicly disclose it. So a lot of the things that...
It's guesswork.
That, yeah, exactly. It's a lot of the things that SEO is built upon is guesswork on how the algorithm is evolving and all that. And you know, this algorithm gets changed so often.
Yeah.
And now it actually thinks more like a human than a machine.
Yeah.
So there's one other factor. It's true that, the algorithm can detect how you built your site and all that. Yeah.
And whether it penalizes you And how much is a question that only Google knows.
Yeah. Exactly.
So I think things to be conscious of, and you're always talking about sloppy code. Mm. Sloppy code works, but it's kind of like the engine behind the website. Mm. It might look beautiful, but it might be coded poorly.
Yeah.
And
yeah.
like what impact could that have on a website for someone?
It'll make it slower.
Yeah. yeah.
Okay, even yeah. even with a site that we make,
yeah.
one thing that I do is I would go through the animations, and even if some animations are built well, if that animation is not being used on a page, I just delete it.
Yeah.
Why? Because if it's there and I forgot that it's there, when a website loads, it actually loads the code for that animation and makes it a little bit slower. Yeah. I mean, the slowness is like in milliseconds. It's just barely perceptible.
Adds up.
But it adds up. And, you know, it's the algorithm here that you're talking about. Mm. Yeah. So
it's like having a crappy engine to a really nice looking car. Yeah. What's the point?
Yeah. yeah, you want both.
Eventually, it's going to crash and burn.
Exactly.
yeah. yeah. Or you can have a really incredible engine and a crappy shell like Amazon.com. Looks like crap. It's a freaking Ferrari.
Exactly. Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Right. Don't come after us.
But there's a reason that Amazon do that, just to shine a light on Amazon. It's like, I think they were saying there's a crazy stat. You're going to have to like maybe look this up. But it was, if their website was 1 second slower, they would lose like billions of dollars.
Mm.
Which, I think we don't even have to look it up to know that that's probably true.
Yeah, there was an ungodly number. It was like 1 second. So they're just absolutely trying to maximize the UX to be as simple and navigable as possible. They're not trying to have flourishes and beautiful design.
Yeah, you'll lose people. Like even people who are very patient are just not patient online because you sometimes you can't afford to be. Like if you know you're working and you think like, oh, just I got a quick like 2 minutes, I'm gonna look something up. And if it takes you more than a minute, you're just gonna be like, ah, I'm not doing that.
Well, even when you're on Amazon, you'll be adding a lot to your cart.
Yeah.
And you want to add a lot quickly.
Exactly.
And it could slow down that ability to add a whole bunch of stuff and then they'd lose money. Hundreds of millions.
Wow.
So what's the actual number? For context, at 1% loss of annual rent. No, okay, that's 1%.
3.8.
I think it was...
I mean, 1% in sales is a lot.
yeah.
For them. I think it was 1 second. Like
100 milliseconds.
Yeah.
In 100 milliseconds, they could lose 1% of sales and that on Amazon?
That's a lot. Yeah.
Hence the lack of animations.
Yes.
Right. So their strategy is different. So this is back to their strategy. Their strategy is simple, universal, bilingual, speed.
Yep. Speed.
Speed over beauty.
Make sure that people who don't know how to use tech know how to buy things from Amazon. Yeah.
Exactly.
They just want the money, which makes sense. Yeah. They're a money business.
Yeah.
So make it as easy as possible to get the person's money.
Yeah.
So you got to know your strategy.
Exactly. Yeah.
All right. So let's end it with some banging questions you can ask a web developer to test them out.
Keep them on the toes. What would you ask?
What would you get a client to ask a web developer to test out if they're full of bullshit or they're literally going to do a good job?
I'll go for Dennis. For this one, I'm starting to think of something really nice.
Oh, you?
yeah, let him process. We'll come back to Hans.
Yeah, I think if you're just thinking of the whole web team, so that includes designers, includes copy, the funniest and most simple thing is literally, what is your strategy from start to finish?
Take me through your process.
And they'll be like, oh, no. And if they heard this right now, they'd be like to me, like, why are you doing this to us?
Why are you doing this to us? You're punishing us.
I want to do it on the fly. Like, but that would be the thing. It's like, what is your full strategy for this project?
Yeah.
Which is the worst question you can usually ask.
What are the phases? What are the stages? Yeah. Break it down for me.
Give me a timeline.
Yeah.
Give me a step-by-step process. I think those are the things that people will be like, oh, no.
Yeah.
But even if they give you a tentative one, then you at least you know that they're talking about. If they say, okay, look, normally this is what happens.
Yeah.
And they go through the process for you. It doesn't have to be very specific, but if they go through the process, then you know you're not dealing with somebody who doesn't know what they're doing.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. You just, even that as a simple question would be like, do you know what you're doing?
Yeah. Cause it's like, you know, trying to shop for websites on the cheapest price is like going to the junkyard and just trying to go, oh, I want a really good car that's got a warranty and it's going to take care of me and not fall apart on my drive to work. You know, it's equivalent of going to a dealership versus a junkyard. So like you got to vet out your web dev. You got to make sure that these people are capable of giving you a vehicle that's going to do what it needs to do.
Yeah.
It's a professional way of saying, do you know what you're doing?
Exactly.
Do you have one?
Yeah. Okay. Although I can't top that. That was a really good question.
That's a good one. He's just like,
good question.
Game ending question.
Yeah. But for me, I would probably ask a dev, what would you do if there is something new that's actually better to what you're used to. Because that's a pride issue.
Yeah.
You know? So you're attacking the pride.
Yeah, attacking the pride. A lot of people actually, me included, sometimes, when there's something new, you're just like, oh, that's crap. I don't want to spend time doing that.
I don't want to learn that right now.
But I would like to work with someone who is willing to explore and willing to swallow their pride a little bit.
Kind of like learn new things as they're working on your project, which we do all the time.
Yeah, exactly.
You're constantly like, oh, I found this thing. I'm going to learn how to do it. I'm like,
Oh, yeah.
Guys, awesome. So, if you found this helpful, please let us know. If you have any questions about websites, we would like to maybe unpack this in the future. We're going to maybe cover e-commerce. But we hope you enjoyed today's episode unpacking websites, copywriting, and AI. I certainly had a lot of fun unpacking this with you guys. A lot of funny questions, good conversation. And thanks for being on the pod today, guys.
Thank you.
Hey,
thank you, Dane.
See you next time.